forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest is Joan Cohen. She's the author of a new book called The Deep Fake: The Potential Impact AI Has on Relationships, Professional Life, Religion, and Political Position. I think this is a very timely, very, very important book, because I don't think many people are contemplating what could be the effects of AI starting to take off and, you know, possibly become pervasive very quickly. So welcome, Joan. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, tell me a bit about the background of yourself and how you came to write this book.
I was an English major in college and a philosophy minor, which is when I got kind of interested in ethics. And after a year of working for a publishing company when I was miserable, I followed my husband's advice and became a programmer, even though I thought it was insane because I didn't think I had any aptitude for it. But I ended up staying in the business, not as a programmer, but in sales and in marketing and strategic partnerships. And I followed that route until I retired, and I really enjoyed my work. I was never a technologist, but there were always technologists right at hand. And if you were nice to them, they would teach you a lot and help you out. I started writing after I retired. This is my second book. And the reason I wanted to write a book about AI was that I was finding that no one I knew, and my friends are all, they're rather old like me, and they're all very well educated and read the same kind of newspapers and so forth that I do. But nobody really understood AI. And so the predominant attitude was, well, we really don't have to worry about that yet anyway. So I didn't think that was true. And the couple of courses that were available where I live, senior learning kind of things, were got into the weeds, you know, neural networks and modeling AI on that. And if people left with an understanding of the technology, I don't know if they did, but what they didn't get really was what it meant for real life. So as if you interview a lot of people, a lot of scientists, I'm sure, you know that there's a ton of nonfiction out there, wonderful books about AI, and you could educate yourself if that's what you'd like to do. And when it comes to fiction, there's science fiction, which now is called speculative fiction, and of course, you know, robots and that whole thing. And when I started writing, it didn't seem like anybody was just writing regular old fiction with AI in it. Now, that's not true anymore because it took me a long time to write the book. But if people don't see AI incorporated into the everyday lives of people in a story or people they know, they're not going to understand what its uses, its consequences. And that, I mean, that's the stuff we need to know, not how it was coded. So that's why I wanted to have regular, the book isn't, it's not technical. They're just people. The leading character, the protagonist, a young woman named Sylvie, falls in love with her trainer, which she wasn't expecting, at her gym. And they argue about AI. I don't think either of them expected to be doing that, but I thought it would be kind of interesting to see how they went back and forth on it. So that's why, that's how I came to be doing this.
Okay. As you said, they argued back and forth about AI. Have you seen that there are evolving fixed positions where some people think, oh, it's terrible, don't look at it, don't use it at all because it's going to replace everyone's jobs and destroy the world? And are there other people that are just so in love with it that they could see nothing wrong with it? Like, are you seeing archetypes of how people feel about it?
Well, one, for example, might be Sam Altman, who I think when he founded or co-founded OpenAI, I think OpenAI was all about helpful, not dangerous AI solutions, really focusing on producing the good stuff. And then Sam Altman decided, hey, and maybe he's going to call me up and tell me that I just defamed him or something. He decided, hey, you know, this is hugely profitable. I don't think we need to just stick to this altruistic charter. Now Elon Musk is taking him to court. But I think that's an example of somebody who swung from one side to the other. I can give you another example.
Sure.
Writers who I think, you know, writers for TV scripts and so forth, novelists, and people doing any kind of fiction writing, I don't think they paid any attention to AI until they started finding out that their books were being fed into AI models to teach them all about their literature, their style, and they were afraid that their work would be copied, reproduced or copied without their being compensated or knowing about it. And they've gone to court. I have no idea where that case is, but
I can give you a quick example.
Yeah.
You know, I play chess online on chess.com, and they have a bunch of bots that they program. You know, they'll, like, Magnus Carlsen is a world champion for many years. So they program the bot, you know, to review, like, you know, thousands of his games, and it plays like him. So they have different personality bots you can play with different levels of ability. So I wonder if a writer or a speaker, you know, if they took all their teachings, all their writings, everything, put it into AI and made a bot that was similar to that person. You know, you query it, it would answer you in the style of that person, which it kind of does on ChatGPT and stuff. Does that take away from that person? You know, what happens to the derivative works that would be created by this facsimile of that person? It opens up a lot of weird issues.
It does. But honestly, I think that this lawsuit is about money. I think people in the creative fields, now making a gross generalization here, never feel quite adequately compensated for the content that they create. I remember when the internet was still becoming so popular, and there were music sites where you could get music for free, which is not true anymore. And the young people were shouting, "Data wants to be free," or something like that. Well, it's great.
I remember, information wants to be free.
Yeah, you know, great, content should be free, but the people who create it are working in a garret somewhere with not enough to eat.
Well, not only that, if you pay someone for content, they can create much higher level content. Yes, I know technology is getting cheaper, but still. But if you don't pay people for it, there's going to be far less incentive, except for the true artists that would create anything. So I would think it would very lead quickly to, like, a poverty of, you know, movies or TV or writing or whatever it may be that AI was intended to replace.
I think you're right. I mean, it would leave people like me behind, and only Tolstoy would see the light of day. And my style can be copied. I'm not sure.
Well, so a more prosaic thing, though, is, you know, if companies and people just want to use AI to create this, that, and the other, I mean, first of all, they would run out of, I guess, good training data after a time, because people would stop doing those activities. And I just feel like it would devolve. You know, the AI feeds on what happened in the past. So if you start having a lot of AI-created stuff, eventually it would become, I guess, a self-referring tight loop where it wouldn't really create anything new. It would just get locked into to what it already had. And the more of it that gets produced and the more of it that gets used, the more it gets locked in, would be my guess.
I don't know either. But the character, a leading character in my book, and starts pondering a future where AI becomes sophisticated enough that... and maybe we're talking about self-awareness, which we certainly don't have now, you know, AI being self-aware, robots being self-aware. But she wonders if you were dating someone and that someone was a robot, and of course you could make it look exactly like a human, if we could program those robots to express the feelings of a human at the appropriate times, empathy. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if that would be a replacement for my husband. He's not home, so I can say that. But I don't know. I mean, the loop that you're describing, and perhaps she thought about it a lot more than I have, but yeah, I suppose that could happen. But I just think people are going to push onward until they can create who knows what. I don't know. A robot that seems to have a soul. Because you wouldn't know that it doesn't unless you knew for a fact that it wasn't a human being. You know,
well, look, if I had a you know, if we had one of these bots that supposedly, you know, was trained to be very empathetic, like the division between women and men, you know, I get told all the time, I don't want my problem solved, just listen to me, which drives me nuts, you know, with my wife and my daughters.
Yes.
So if there was an AI system, I'm sure it could be programmed in the right way, but I don't think it would be. I think it would tend to, like, let's say, be like, just empathetic and just listen, but it would offer nothing of itself. You know, if you're fine with a totally selfish relationship where you don't ask anything of the other person or entity, okay, but I don't think there's going to be relationships, really. I mean, at best, it would be a servant, because it would offer, again, it has nothing to offer. It can't say, oh, you know how I grew up, or, oh, I went to the store today and I blah, 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 whatever. It's there to serve you. It's not really a back and forth.
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on support us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click support us today. Now back to the show.
Yeah. No, I can't envision it. You're right. But I mean, I'm crystal ball gazing here, because I have no idea how far the technology can go. But it's, you know, from the time I started the book to the time I finished the book, I had to keep going back to the manuscript and changing things, because everything was changing. I even had to make one change after it went to my publisher. So, I mean, the speed of development is frightening.
But I think, like, I was just talking about this last night. I think one thing that may help with worry is, you know, look at computer chips and Moore's Law.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have been around since, like, not the start of them, certainly, but the start of the internet, I've been around since, and it sounds like you have.
I've been around forever.
So what I saw is, yes, okay, yeah. So it did develop exponentially, but then it seems to have totally slowed down the past, I would say, even 15 years. You know, yes, there's slightly faster computer chips and you know, et cetera, but it really hasn't moved. It's slowed way down. And same with phones. There was an explosion of features and all those other things you could do. And now the past few years, it's like, oh, look, it has 2 more megapixels in the camera,
right,
and 30 more minutes of battery life. Ooh. It seems like things follow more of an S-curve instead of just a forever exponential. And I would guess with AI, that's probably what will happen. There will be crazy innovation and all kinds of stuff, but I would guess that it will settle in for a time and then maybe get incrementally better and not move so fast.
That makes sense. I just keep wondering, I mean, outside of the U.S., I don't know what's going on. I mean, I just read that China's way behind us in AI, but I don't know what really is going on in other countries. So if development here is like an S, and maybe we manage to do some regulating, I just feel like who knows what is going to happen elsewhere, especially because I'm sure the militaries are going to adopt this and run with it, all of the militaries, including obviously our own. So I don't know, that is going to push the technology forward because there's a motivation to do it.
Well, what did you said you had to go back to your manuscript and revise it a lot.
Yeah.
So if you remember, what was like an initial early premise you had, and then how did it change over time? You know, even a really narrow one, what you did.
Well, my protagonist, a woman named Sylvie, worked for a company that sold application software, but it had some AI capabilities. But she really didn't know a whole lot about the market. And then she found out that one of the characters was developing something incredible that nobody knew about, with the help of outside people that he knew and some inside people. And what he was developing, what I started with, was having him developing something that could write a novel. I mean, it's ridiculous. Today, you have software that can write Shakespeare, write anything. And so that was my naivete. So that obviously wasn't going to work. And I had to change what he was working on. And then, because a deep fake plays a role towards the end of the novel, gives an object lesson in what can go wrong. At first, indeed, fake was an exotic thing that hardly anybody knew how to do. Now it's, you know, you can buy it, the software at CVS. I'm exaggerating, but it was that kind of thing that, I mean, wait, she's in the IT world. She can't possibly be that naive. She's got to be reading, you know, industry publications online and so forth. And that was the kind of thing. And the story itself is not so much about AI. So you wouldn't think I would have to make changes. But though, you know, once you have something that you write and it's no good, it's not working, it's a showstopper. You have to go back and figure out what the implications are before you can go forward. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it was primarily around the capabilities of, because I started writing before there was, you know, Chat GPT or GPT-4. Yeah. And so that kind of changed everything.
Well, I mean, yeah, like I've used Perplexity and Claude and ChatGPT and Google Gemini and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's tiring, at least at this stage. You know, if you want to know about something, you'll ask it a question. And then you're like, well, what about this? So you ask it that. And what about this? You ask it that. What about the, you know, I don't know if a lot of people, unless they have a real interest, would have the time and patience to serially ask a whole bunch of questions and try to get the answers they want from it. And I've always found with the internet over my whole life, I've been on it for, again, like 30 plus, well over 30 years. Most of the world's information that I want is just not there. You know, you'll get maybe like the surface layer. And I think that's what will happen with AI. But I think probably 99% of people will just use it at a surface level, not to insult them or anything, but I just don't think that they're going to like go deep and investigate this, that, or the other. And that is a real danger, because whoever puts a surface level answer, people are going to say, oh, well, the AI said it, so it must be true. I'm just going to go with that.
Yes, you're right.
I think that's one problem that's coming.
Yes. I mean, it probably will be used for very specific, optimized for specific purposes, such as in medicine, you know, reading radiology reports or predicting prognosis. And so it will be great at that and whatever else it's aimed at, financial analysis, aimed at, so to speak, financial analysis, you know, predicting markets or where, you know, invest the best investments. So yes, in other respects, it will be kind of surface. You're right. I mean, if you were to go,
Google and the search engines do the same thing already. But so that's why I think it'll be a good analog that AI will kind of be used in a similar way. At least, you know, these large language models like ChatGPT, et cetera. Maybe not. Yeah. I don't know.
College kids will be very happy with it. And the professors are going crazy trying to figure out how to test knowledge, you know, without students cheating and using AI for their answers, their essays, whatever.
Well, that would be pretty easy, actually, if the professor has the students in the room and says, all right, everyone, put your phones down, and I'm going to ask you questions. Then they're going to, you know, they're going to poop themselves, because all of a sudden they'll be stripped naked. They'll have no technology to help them. And you'll very quickly see who knows and who doesn't know.
You're right. But I don't know that works in a class that's, you know, the size of an auditorium.
So, you know, what did the research, how did it change your mind and your perception of AI? You know, I don't know if you remember, but in your research for the book and your writing of it, what are some ideas you had that changed dramatically, let's say?
I found myself, well, the trainer in the gym is Jewish. He's the son of a long line of rabbis, which he doesn't want to join. And the woman who's selling the software, she is not Jewish, but the time comes where he just wants her to go to a service with him, and she just, her mind wanders. I mean, there's so much talk of the soul. And, you know, I found myself just carrying that thought process further than I had in the past. I mean, who's to say what a soul is? And I know that, you know, huge volumes, libraries have been written on this subject, so I'm not presuming to know, but you know, it's like what we were talking about before. If a robot seemed to have a soul, I mean, how would you know? I mean, what difference would it make? How do I know that my soul isn't just a bunch of electrons running around in my brain that present themselves as a spiritual need? So
I guess, yeah, why would they?
Well, I ponder, I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, I was one of those kids who sat in the stacks of my college library, gazing out over the valley, wondering if the tree fell in a forest, if it would make a noise if no one was there to hear it. So, I mean, I've been pondering perhaps ridiculous issues my whole life, and I don't have the answers, but I enjoy writing about them, and then I can have my characters think about them and engage with one another. So that was one path I went down that I wasn't expecting to go down. I learned some things about myself and my writing, even though I had already written a book. And I don't know if you're interested in the things
I learned.
I realized, or perhaps reinforced the view, that the toughest thing about writing is keeping your butt in the seat. It's pretty much like any job. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it does have to get done. So maybe I have an advantage being older. I hate to say old, because I see a diminishing runway. And I'm thinking, and I'm already working on another book, and I'm thinking, okay, no, if you're going to go off and open a box of chocolate chip cookies, this isn't going to happen for you. And I'm not saying that you don't need to be a skilled writer. You need a lot of things. But I think that ability to stay with something is very important. And I think that for a writer, you can't, I have seen beginning writers, including myself, go to conferences and ask authors, what's your process? What time do you write? How much time do you spend? And you get a million different answers, because some people get up at 4 a.m. and they are just juiced up to start writing before they have to leave for the office. Some people, I met a woman who rented a room, and after she put her kids to bed and her husband stayed in the house, and she went to write through the night. I mean, crazy. A lot of things can work, but the only thing that is absolutely required is that you don't stop. Does that make sense?
What do you mean you don't stop?
You stay in your seat. You stay there and you keep writing. It's like, my husband doesn't like to read books that are 600 pages long. And I keep saying, why? If it's going to be on your night table, you're going to read every night before you go to bed. What difference does it make if it takes you 6 months to read that book, or you get something short and you're reading several books? It's the same thing with writing. You have to stay with it, and eventually you'll finish.
Well, people have to have patience and perseverance, and right, a lot of stuff's going on in their lives, and they may, you know, maybe something bad happens, and now they just can't bring themselves to keep writing, or their mind changes. Think, oh no, yeah, I spent three chapters writing this, but now I don't believe it anymore.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons why this was true in my last book too, that I wanted my characters to have personal problems as well as professional problems, and have them overlap. Because you have to be awfully good at compartmentalization not to be affected in some way by what's going on in your life.
Yeah. Right.
I remember when I first went back to work and I had kids and I had help at home taking care of them. At 3 o'clock, it was like a little bell went off in my head, and I wondered if the nanny was, you know, had them parked in front of some junky TV show or what. As it turned out, the nanny was drinking, but that's another story. You know, you're balancing both, and maybe that's tougher for women than men, but I think it's tough for men too.
Yeah, no, definitely, I agree. So I don't know, what do you think, if we jump forward just maybe 10 years, what does a person's day look like versus now?
Okay, well,
they always make those stupid commercials, you know, oh, I get up and I say, hey, AI, tell me the weather. And I go, hey, AI, can you schedule a pickup of my laundry? You know, do you think it'll be like that? Or what do you think it'll be like, the average person?
Well, I think there'll be more of that. I mean, supposedly refrigerators can talk to you now and tell you what you've run out of. And so I suppose that could happen. I suppose the thing that you ask to play music and everything, you ask all your questions, would be more of that. Our cars, I really worry about, and I know that this is hardly original with me, but I keep wondering, what is the value system of the people who are programming the self-driving cars? I mean, is it better to kill you, the driver, than a group of children? Is it an eye for an eye? I mean, if somebody rear-ends you, do you then you know, back into him harder, or, you know, what we have so many different value systems in the world, you know, turn the other cheek. You know, I yeah, just
don't. What could happen with a car, for instance? You know, of course you have to disclaim all liability, but maybe you could program it to, you know, in certain situations that you would choose in the way you want it to choose, but then therefore you're liable.
Right.
You know, if there's, look, let's say, like, it's called the trolley problem. You know, on one track, there's like a, you know, a bunch of orphans tied to the track you're going to run over. On the other track, there's some old person, let's say, you know, who do you run over and why? So it's left to the person to decide, which it is now, you know, somewhat.
Exactly.
You know, they're liable. If it's left to the AI in the car, well, then they could be liable. So maybe what they'll do is some hybrid where they're like, all right, you know, by driving this car, you agree, blah, 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 whatever. And you can, again, have different driving settings and preferences. Maybe that would be where it goes.
Maybe, but I don't know. Would it be hackable? I mean, cars are
already hackable,
at least some of them.
Here's what I envision for cars. You know, I hope it never happens, but I think it will. You know, a wealthy person and maybe their family are driving down the road. The door is locked over the car's, you know, stereo system. A voice says, you know, your car has been hijacked. If you don't have $1 million deposited to this account, we're going to drive you off a cliff. And the car starts speeding up, slowing down, heat coming on and off, flashing light, show you that they control the car totally. I'm pretty much 100% sure that's going to happen, if it hasn't already, very soon, hackable cars. You know.
Well, I think that's a book you need to write.
Well, I think it's already been contemplated, but yeah. Or a car could kidnap you easily.
Yeah.
I'm in somewhere, all of a sudden I can't decide, that it's driving me where I don't want to go.
Yes.
Easy. No problem.
I could think of some political figures I would do that to if I had the technology. But that's not the subject.
These things, you know, probably are going to happen. It'll be used for good. It'll be used for bad. You know, in the legal sphere, that's what I worry about. You know, if someone trains a deep fake on you and then it has it appear to commit a crime, and by all accounts, how do you prove it wasn't you? Well, you tend to do this and that and go to these places and, you know, say these things. And we have voice recordings of you doing this. And we have this and that happen, which fits your pattern. And, you know, how would you defend against that?
Yeah, I think there are many, many things that could be the worst outcome of AI. But I think the potential for misinformation, disinformation is enormous. I mean, it's already started, but I mean, you know, the president could be shown with no clothes on, you know, surrounded by a harem of women, or I mean, anything. And people believe this stuff because of the silo effect of news that we get, where we choose our news. So that I see is AI out of control, and I'm hoping that that won't happen. But we have an election coming up, so we'll see.
So again, now that you've written the book, are you pessimistic about AI? Are you optimistic? Is it just a big mixture of them in your mind? Like, how do you feel?
I feel that it's coming. It's inevitable. And we can try to regulate it, but we'll be nibbling around the edges. And I think that it's just one more area where people are going to have to be watchful and try to use their judgment in what they allow into their lives. But I think there's no going back. I don't believe anybody, you know, what some people were saying a short while ago, well, we should stop all the development now until we can set some rules. Well, that's not going to happen. So no, I'm comfortable with it. I know it's going forward. I think we'll have marvelous benefits. And I try not to worry about the danger. Like I said, the greatest danger I worry about, the most short-term danger I worry about, is the news on the internet.
Mm. Well, already, like TikTok, supposedly the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party,
right,
shows inspirational things to people in China, and outside they show things to demoralize them and kind of turn them into make them mentally lazy and turn them into just a constant TikTok feed consuming mess. So I think it's already happening. And the AI, you know, it's not like super sophisticated, let's say, but it's sophisticated enough to feed us things and get us into, just feed us more of what we want and get us caught mentally in various traps, where it pushes us mentally in certain directions, maybe radicalizes us, you know, more left, more right, polarizes us, et cetera. So it already has that power. I don't know what'll happen if it becomes more pervasive.
I think I read somewhere that in North Korea, in some of the villages, there are loudspeakers that just all day long are blaring out the dear leader's messages, and it never stops. They're force fed this thing, and it's kind of like that, and kind of because we're on social media so often, can be addictive. I mean, I didn't want to be on social media, but on my first book, my publicist told me I had to be. So now suddenly I've got to check my Facebook all the time. But you worry about kids and what they're seeing on TikTok and what they're thinking. It was bad enough when it was just magazines with, you know, reinforcing the worst aspects of our culture. But now it's everywhere. And AI will only facilitate that.
Yep, true. So are you thinking about a next book or a sequel? Or is this going to take time to marinate the ideas from this book?
No, I don't like sequels. It's sort of like copying yourself. To me, feels like cheating. No, I'm working on another book, and it's very different. I've used young people up until now because who wants to read about old people? I mean, some maybe old people, but I'm writing about a pretty unusual group of old people, and I don't want to tell you where it's going, but it's funny. And it's, you know, it's not going to be about, or only peripherally about Alzheimer's, which my first book was about, or artificial intelligence, which this book was about. And it's completely different.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll be finding genius again when it comes out, but I hope you will.
I know. I'm glad to speak to you. You know, it was good. What is the published date of the book? Is it... You know, I know you sent me an advanced copy. I very much appreciate it. But when will it be on Amazon and Kindle and all over the place?
It's already up on all the book sites, but it will be published April 2nd. So it's soon.
Excellent. And, okay.
Yeah. And I'm very excited about it. You know, this is the second career for me. I mean, I'm a terrible golfer, so it was this or nothing.
Well, let's restate, you know, if you would just please restate the name of the book. And, you know, I'd encourage listeners of this podcast to get it and think about this. I would say, you know, it's better to think about this and hear perspectives than to just bury your head in the sand. There's a lot about it I don't want to think about either. So I do understand, but I think people really should think about it because it is going to affect their lives. Unfortunately, hopefully in a good way, but if it's in a bad way, they need to be prepared somewhat.
Yeah. Well, probably both, right? So the book is The Deep Fake. And as I said, it's coming out April 2nd, and it's fiction. It's a novel. It's a good story.
The book is a deep fake in itself. I'm just kidding. It's fiction.
There's, you know, corporate crime. There are all kinds of people. There's family, crazy family stuff. There's romance. It's a lot of things. And the AI, which starts to be nowhere in the beginning of the book, becomes more and more woven through it. So, I mean, it's a pretty painless way. That's exactly what I wanted to do. So people don't have to be thinking, well, I don't want to read a book about artificial intelligence. Well, it's not. It's a story. It's fiction. That's how we have to get people used to it, I think.
Excellent. Well, Joan, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and for writing this book. I really appreciate being here.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy talking with you.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at findinggeniuspodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.